Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Tuesday, the 28th of January. We're going to start with our most read story on the website today. Shocking footage shows the moment other drivers intervened to stop a drunk driver on the M25. Well, Kate has the details on this one for the podcast and she's here with me now. Kate, this is an unbelievable story. What can you tell us about it?
Well, police had received reports a motorist was slumped over the wheel of his Vauxhall Astra on the M25 at Leatherhead and that the car was being driven very slowly on the carriageway and weaving from lane to lane. Now, this was at about 7:30 a.m. in the busy morning rush. Other drivers were quick to catch on to what was happening. They slowed down around him and put their hazard lights on and managed to steer the driver towards the hard shoulder and eventually bring him to a stop.
And what happened when police arrived on the scene?
Well, when officers got there, Amos Chirimuto was still slumped over the steering wheel and there was a bottle of Jack Daniels on the passenger seat and vomit in the front of the car. In fact, he was so inebriated that he had to be helped out of the vehicle. He couldn't communicate with officers and he was unable to complete a breath test. Instead, he was taken back to the station to have his blood taken. He was found to have 319 milligrams of alcohol in 100 millilitres of blood. The legal limit is 80, which makes him around four times the legal limit.
Now, this all happened in May last year, but he's now been sentenced. Is that right?
That's right. The 42-year-old who lives in Wallace Avenue in Maidstone was later charged with drink driving. One officer said he'd never seen someone so drunk. The court heard he'd been grieving the loss of his older brother at the time and that he'd had a fight with his parents about his excessive drinking the day before. He's been given a six-week sentence that's been suspended for 12 months and been ordered to complete an alcohol treatment requirement for 9 months. He's also been banned from driving for 32 months and paid £241 in costs.
Thanks, Kate. And you can see the dashcam footage within the story today at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A man's appeared in court following an alleged attack in Folkestone. Police were called to the Brickfield Bar in Cherry Garden Lane last Thursday and a man was taken to hospital. A 45-year-old from Radnor Cliff in the town is accused of GBH with intent and possessing an offensive weapon. A man who deliberately drove his van at two police vehicles during a chase near Faversham has been jailed. Fraser Higgins was asked to stop near Junction 7 of the M2 last September. He went on to hit a motorbike and patrol car. You can see footage at Kent Online. The 31-year-old who was arrested in Egbert Road has been locked up for 2.5 years. A drug dealer who took over a vulnerable woman's home in Medway has been locked up. A court heard Jaden Stewart exploited and controlled his victim so he could trade in crack cocaine and heroin. The 24-year-old from Canning Town in East London has been jailed for 12 years and will have to spend another 4 on licence. A detective sergeant has been sacked from Kent Police after inappropriately touching a female colleague twice. A disciplinary hearing's been told Gary Stamp convinced her not to report what had happened in 2020. The 49-year-old has been dismissed without notice for inappropriate sexual conduct. Now, the man in charge at the Port of Dover has revealed the EU's new entry-exit system, or EES as it's known, has been delayed again. It'll use biometric data like fingerprints and facial scans and was initially supposed to come in 2022. Well, the Kent Online podcast understands a phased rollout will happen from the end of this year instead. Doug Bannister is the chief exec of the port and he's been speaking to our reporter Sam Lennon.
So as it stands right now, since the European Union postponed the implementation of EES in November, we still don't have a firm date. But we've adopted a Department for Transport planning assumption that it'll be coming in November. So that's what we're gearing our plans up to.
Is this some sort of relief for you? Because it's going to be such a complicated system and there could be great hiccups. The fact that it's been phased in, is that sort of better for you?
You know, absolutely. So we're pleased, whilst we were all ready to go for November this year, we're very pleased that the European Union had adopted a different approach, which is now seeing us with a bit more time to make certain that they can get their technology to work properly and it can be properly tested. And with an implementation date now, thinking about planning on November, we don't yet know. But then a progressive implementation from there, which should allow us to ramp up the EES registration process in line with making certain that the system can cope.
Could we be sort of really optimistic and hope that these terrible traffic congestions that spill out into the town,
yeah, well,
could they become a thing of the past? could be that, we'd be that hopeful, or is that too much of a dream?
So all of our work on the implementation of EES in Dover has been designed around making certain that we can offer a compliant service for what it is that we need to do for the actual checks. But really importantly, it's to make certain that we minimize the impact of any traffic congestion on the town of Dover, because that's what we try to do. You know, we did it very successfully last summer. We did mostly well over Christmas, but all our aims are trying to make certain that we're mitigating the impact in our local community for the activity that we take place in the port.
All right. And finally, Granville Dock is physically filled up, but there's still, because that's changed the appearance of the Western Docks now.
So we successfully completed the whole infill of the Granville Dock. It only took us about 6 weeks in September and October, but part of the plan is that all that ground needs to settle after it's been reclaimed. So it's going through that settling process, and we'll have a bit more work to do in order to prepare the site for activity, but we can only start doing that in April once everything's settled.
As you heard there, extra land has been created at the port to hold more traffic to try and avoid delays in the town.
Kent Online reports.
Three people at the centre of a criminal gang which ran brothels across the country, including here in Kent, are going to be sentenced later this year. The trio helped to run sites in Canterbury, Medway, Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells, although a court heard the operation was most likely operated in full from China. The suspects have been released on bail and are due to face a sentencing hearing in March. South East Waters say most customers in Sevenoaks should now be back in supply after a power cut knocked out their treatment works. Some houses had low pressure or no water at all yesterday, prompting bosses to urge people to only use water for the essentials. Although there was some disruption this morning, it should gradually be getting back to normal throughout the day. Land next to a rundown pub in Herne Bay could be used as an energy storage facility. The Sharon Coulter on Owl's Hatch Road closed in 2015 and has since been targeted by vandals. Now a power company wants to build on the pub football team's old pitch, with the development able to power 64,000 homes. Next today, and the issue of family hubs has been raised in the Commons following concerns some mums and dads in part of Kent aren't getting the support they need. Blossoms in Deal was one of a number of sites that closed last year in a bid to save Kent County Council millions of pounds. The sites have been replaced with family hubs in different locations. But Dover and Deal MP Mike Tapp isn't convinced that's working.
In Deal, the Blossoms Children's Centre has been closed, and the new merged service does not offer the level of service required for 1 to 4 year olds and is not fit for purpose. What can be done to reopen this much loved and sorely missed community asset?
This was the response from Education Minister Janet Dabby.
Local authorities must engage with families to co-design services and ensure services meet their needs. We're investing £126 million in Family Hearts and Start for Life and through our Plan for Change. This government aims to get a record proportion of children hitting key developmental targets by the age of 5. I would like to acknowledge my honourable friend, and if he would write to me further on any particular issues, I would be happy to take that up. I would also like to say department officials are aware of the case and are working with Kent County Council to continue to deliver services.
Kent Online reports.
Two sites in Kent have been added to this year's Theatres at Risk register. There are concerns about the Theatre Royal in Margate and Roundhouse Theatre in Dover. Well, I've been chatting to Claire Appleby, who's from the Theatres Trust.
We are launching our Theatres at Risk Register 2025, which is our way of highlighting and supporting those theatres we consider to be most at threat and under risk across the UK. And it's really our way of bringing these theatres and their stories to a local and also a national audience, and for audiences, for them to understand the opportunities which are attached to these theatres, both in terms to the local community but also to the local economy.
It's quite sad, isn't it, to think that there are theatres dotted around the country that are at risk, and two in particular are here in Kent, aren't they?
Yes, that's right. It is sad to think that they're at risk, but we always hope that these theatres will have a viable future given the right support. And yes, Nicola, you're right, there are two in Kent. There's the Theatre Royal in Margate and also the Roundhouse in Dover. both of which are on our theatres at risk register, but both of which are making progress, which is good news.
Yes, we've done stories actually, particularly about the Theatre Royal in Margate, because the council there are really looking to invest and bring that back to life. That must be music to your ears.
Oh, it really is. And to be fair to Thanet Council, they have been looking for some time about ways to make that theatre a self-sustaining operation and to find a solution to the challenges of having to repair a Grade 2 star listed theatre. And it's brilliant that they're forging forward with a solution there. So they had the original Towns Fund money, which allowed them to develop the sustainable solution moving forward, which is really exciting, that the kind of solution for a kind of performing arts hub for Margate, which can bring so much more to the town as well. You know, it's talking about opportunities for young people to get involved in performing arts and creative careers, and talking about attracting not just a local audience, but also a national audience and even people, visitors from overseas. So that's a really exciting vision. They now have announced that they're going to put some more towns funding towards it. They've had a little bit of a hiccup with some further funding, but they're looking at how to kind of progress based on a kind of a phased approach. So it's a really exciting time for the Theatre Royal, I think, and we're looking forward to a really positive future for that.
And what do you know about the theatre in Dover? It's a relatively small venue, but of course equally important.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it is a small venue, but it's, well, particularly geographically important because there's no other theatre in Dover, which is one of the reasons for adding it to our register when it closed. And originally, the council were looking at moving a lot of council services, adult services, youth services within the building, because the theatre itself is within the Dover Discovery Centre, so that the theatre was going to be lost and council services moved in. Now, what they've actually done now is they've reassessed that, they've taken it back and they've seen the theatre space as an opportunity there, and it's an opportunity for them to transition the roundhouse back into community use through repurposing the space for broader programming of cultural activity. So that gives increased access to residents throughout the week for creative workshops, rehearsals and training, which is absolutely brilliant news. And we at Theatres Trust have been able to support the council with a small bit of funding through our Resilient Theatres, Resilient Communities programme, which has allowed an initial feasibility study to allow the council to fully understand the options they need to refurbish that theatre space to align with their new vision for it. So there's some really exciting news there too, and we really hope to see progress on both of these projects.
Of course, we know how theatres struggled during COVID, but since then we've had a cost of living crisis. Has that had a big impact? Has it impacted how many theatres are appearing on your list now simply because they can't afford to keep them open?
Yes, it has, unfortunately. And exactly as you say, the cost of living crisis, the squeeze on local authority budgets, also the issue with crumbly concrete or RAC, reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete. So this year, unfortunately, we've added 5 theatres to our Theatres at Risk register in councils around the country. So there's 2 in Scotland and 3 in England. So it's brilliant that in Kent you have 2 councils who are really supportive and looking to keep their or to reopen their theatres and looking for self-sustaining solutions to that. So I would say we're getting more positive news in Kent, and we'll work to support the other councils around the country so that they can come to similar solutions for their theatres too.
Thanks ever so much to Claire for chatting to me. Next, and staff at the University of Kent have been offered voluntary redundancy as it looks to save more money. People working at its campuses in Canterbury and Medway have until February the 16th to put in a request. Anyone who's accepted will be told the following month. It's emerged Kent's busiest hospital has had to wait almost a year for the results of its latest inspection by the health watchdog. It's understood the CQC's report on Medway Maritime's A&E is one of 500 that still hasn't been published because of an IT issue. The Gillingham MP Nushaba Khan has described it as disappointing. Kent's Police Chief Constable looks set to stay in the role for another 2 years. The Police Commissioner who oversees the force has supported a request for Tim Smith to extend his contract. That decision now needs to be ratified at a meeting of the county's crime panel early next month.
Kent Online News.
Now there's anger today as a parish council in Kent prepares to knock down a toilet block described as iconic by the local community. People in Mepham say the facility opposite Pitfield Green is vital for locals and visitors. But the parish council claims the toilets aren't fit for purpose and need a £50,000 facelift. James Ferrin is angry they could be demolished.
There's massive public opinion about keeping these toilets open. They were closed without consultation of the general public. And as you've seen from the amount of people that showed up today, and also the results of a couple of parish polls, well, one parish poll and one poll on Facebook, over 90% of people locally want them to stay open. We need them for local residents. We need them for people that come to the rural area walking for pleasure. We need them for those people. We also need them for the vast amount of service people that use the area. Bus drivers, binmen, postmen, delivery drivers, tradespeople. The council just shut them without any consideration and any conversation with the local population. But unfortunately, the council are now rather unwilling to reconsider opening them and properly talk about what can be done. They had a survey done, but that survey only looked at the outside of the building. And was factually incorrect. It said that there was only two toilets and no disabled provision, but there are clearly male, female and disabled toilets around the back. So they've made decisions based on a report that's factually incorrect and only half of the job. So what we want them to do is get another survey done, look at it properly and get proper costings. However, the council are pressing ahead with investigating demolishing them. You know, we've got the parish clerk here today measuring up to see whether actually they can be demolished without any planning permission, and the council just aren't listening to the local population.
Our reporter Joe Crosley has also been chatting to litter pickers from Culverston, Leslie and Shirley. They'd wanted to use the public loos when they reached the green recently.
We walk down through the local village, clear the paths and hedgeways, and we do it every week to keep things going in the community. We're quite upset really about the fact that the toilets are closed, because sometimes we need to go and this is vital for not just us but everyone in the community and people that walk around, you know, dog walkers, cyclists. So, you know, we would like it to be open.
And finally, we can hear from Ian Cleary, who's lived in Mepham for 27 years.
I feel very strongly about the toilets. One, it's an iconic building within Mepham. Two, it serves our parish, and probably more importantly, it serves visitors to our parish, such as walkers, deer veers, van drivers, bus drivers, postmen, delivery men. Everybody that serves our village needs to use these facilities. So that's why we all feel so strongly about it, and we had a very good response this morning and a good turnout. Within 24 hours notice, probably had some 50 to 60 people here. Who are all fighting for the same facility to remain open.
Sure. And just talk to me a little bit about the green itself, because it's well used in the summer, I'm guessing?
Throughout the summer months, there's all activities, events that go on, very often without the cricket club being open. So these facilities just need to be used by everybody coming to our community. And they're spending money in our community. They're using our pubs, they're using our coffee shops. We need to provide something. And when we go to other parishes, we need to use their facilities.
Now, councillors voted last month to demolish the toilet block, which was built in the 1950s. They've told us they're looking at the idea of replacing it with a single unisex toilet instead. This would be subject to getting planning permission and funding from Gravesham Council. And finally today, graffiti has been removed from the iconic arches of the Royal Esplanade in Ramsgate. A council team carried out the work after people living nearby complained it spoiled the look of the area. In total, they removed more than 160 cases of graffiti last year.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and the new Gillingham manager is still hoping for his first win with the side tonight. They're travelling to take on Grimsby Town after drawing 1-1 at Tranmere Rovers at the weekend. And John Coleman says things need to improve.
There's no point moaning about it. You don't curl up on the ball. You've got to stick your chest out. Be bold, be brave. It's my job to change things here. You know, we're not going to be the same old, same old. And people could be forgiven for thinking, oh, here we go again. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. we have to slowly implement, well, not slowly, we have to quickly implement what we're going to do. That might mean bringing new players in. It's a good club, Gillingham. It's a well-run club. And it's only, in my eyes, it's only going to get better. I want to be part of being the steward who makes it better. And to do that, players are going to have to buy into, one, high work rates, but two, they're going to have to improve with the quality. And, you know, we have got the players. If the quality wasn't there, I wouldn't be asking them to do things that I didn't think they could do. I know they can do it. And then if they haven't got the legs to play the way I want to play, I'll have to get other people to do.
The Jewels are currently 17th in the League Two table, with tonight's opponents up in 9th. Our sports reporter Luke Waddell has also spoken to Jewels defender Shadogi about how things are going with the new managing team.
Every day, the players giving in 100%. They know what they want. They know what to expect from each and every one of our players. And, you know, as players, we try to deliver, you know, week in, week out in games.
What do you make of the table as well? I think Dan is 17th at the minute. You still think it's very much achievable to make the aims that you started the season for?
Haven't looked at the table just yet, but, you know, still all to play for. So just keep trying to get points on the board and see where it takes us, really.
Mm. Still good vibe in the changing room? Still upbeat?
Of course. Always good vibes, really. You know, we try to put the past in the past and just focus on the next game. So we wouldn't let the game dictate how we respond, how we feel. But we just go again, really, yeah.
Kick-off tonight is at 7:45. You'll be able to follow the match action at Kent Online, and we'll have reaction to the result in tomorrow's podcast. And if you missed it yesterday, Kent's Emma Raducanu has lost her first-round match at the Singapore Open. The game with Spain's Cristina Buxer lasted more than 3 hours, but the 22-year-old from Orpington fell short in the deciding set. It was her first match back since the Australian Open. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, and you can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online podcast.